Miss Barnborough, Reel 10.
We didn't have to be told we knew exactly what to do and in which way we would best serve the patient. The operations, of course, were mostly undertaken by our surgical men. Incidentally, we called them all doctors. That was our name for them. They were really surgeons. Chirurg is the name for surgeon. But we never thought of calling our surgeons chirurg. We just called them doctor. And they just called us sister or sestrica. We never knew. We never bothered about names. There was no time to begin with. And so it went on. But the operations were mainly undertaken by the surgeons themselves. I have made many operations, not difficult ones, extracting bullets and cutting away pieces of iron or splinters that had got under the skin. That was quite easy. But the very, very big operations to the head, to the stomach, and the amputations were done mainly by the surgeons themselves. And they would work from morning till night when we were overcome by many, many wounded, almost without ceasing. It was a chain worker. One after the other, these men would be laid on the operating table, and one after the other, they would be taken away to the shed or to the mortuary where they would be dying unconscious.
In addition to those men who were so seriously injured, there must have also been men arriving at your first aid station who were hardly wounded at all, that you could patch up on the site.
That is true. And from them we sometimes gleaned information about the various reactions in the trenches of the soldiers. And we could learn from them just what kind of enemy they had been up against. Usually it was in 1915, they came to us completely worn out in mind, body and soul, because they had been up against supernatural manpower and dreadful missiles which smashed not only human beings, but smashed the earth and the forests and everything round them, churned them up. And they knew that some of the most deadly weapons in the world were being used at that time by the Allied Germans and their Austrian colleagues.
Did all men who were wounded then come to you, whether it was very minor or not, or was there somewhere else for men to go who had really negligible injuries?
There were many men who came. If sometimes we had no time to even look at their wounds, if they were walking cases. And then we used to send them round to our transport where there would be given them hot things to eat and the peasant bread to eat and cheese. But never did we stop to feed them until we had dressed all wounds. And many of them were too tired and would just ask to be allowed to rest. And they, perhaps with a broken arm or a broken leg, would just go and lie down somewhere outside on the grass in the shade. And they would sleep and sleep like children until the ambulances came round and then the ambulance men took over. We were only concerned with dressing and cleaning the wounds and bandaging them, because we had many, many men, 50, 60 or more men, who were bringing in the ambulances daily and driving off with the bandage men to the base lazarettes and hospitals.
Did you have difficulty finding places for all the men to sleep?
Dreadful difficulty. There were times when there was no place at all. And more than once we have put unconscious men in what we have used as a mortuary, an outside shed or a barn or a cottage, which was uninhabited. And I often feared that they might wake up and find themselves in the wrong place. And I remember once there was one man where there was nowhere else to put him. And all night long I felt I could hear him knocking, as it were, to attract attention. It was only nerves. It wasn't real, of course, because he was unconscious still the next morning. And I imagine he would be unconscious for many days.
While you were out there, right at the battle lines, what was your source of light and warmth and water? While you were out at the battle lines, what was your source of light and warmth and water?
You mean for our personal needs?
For yourself and for the patients.
Well, for the patients we had it. The Zemstvo supplied everything.
Well,
and our transport was always there.
Did you have electricity? Was there a generator?
No.
Was there gas?
Anything we did, yes. We had the primus stoves and that kind of thing. And everything that we had sterilized, the bint and the bandages, they were in these big drums, and they were taken care of and carted about. Wherever we went, they were with us. We had our own furmanka, that is to say, a wheeled kind of wagon, which brought anything and everything we needed with us.
How did you get water?
That was a difficulty. I can't really remember. I don't remember at the present time. Perhaps if I thought it out, I might remember. But I don't remember at the present time that we were ever without it. Because Mamasha, our housekeeping sister, she had a wonderful way of making tea at almost any and every moment. And if we, sometimes she would call us from our work. She never did any bandaging. She was only concerned with feeding us and looking after us. A real housekeeper. And sometimes from bandaging she would call us and we would have a cup of tea. For us it was a drink of the life, an elixir of life, because it just cheered us up and gave us new strength and new...
What did you do about sanitary and washing facilities for yourselves?
That is a very difficult thing to answer. And especially as you are taking it all down in black and white, I don't think I could tell you. But sometimes things were very, very difficult for us. Very difficult. As far as the washing was concerned, we had a man, one of our orderlies, who would wash things for us when it was possible. When, too, it was possible, we would go to the river and wash our own clothes, like the peasant women washed them. That is, banging them against the stone and throwing great waves of water over them and leaving them in the sunshine to bleach and dry.
Did you have a tent with a tub in it for a bath?
Yes, we could take baths. Sometimes, not always, but there was on one occasion when we were staying for some length of time in reserve, the first thing our soldiers did was to make what they called a banya. And that they made a stove, plenty of wood about, and they heated the water from the river. And there each one of us was allowed exactly 5 minutes to go in and have a bath. Needless to say, we rejoiced, and it was a wonderful thing. But alas, that kind of thing didn't happen very often, and when it did happen, it didn't last. There were many people. Is this all right for you, as I'm telling you?
Yes. How long was your hair then? In the photographs, you always have it tucked back. So I can't tell if you had long or short hair.
Well, I had my head shaven when I was ill, you know.
Oh, well, of course. But I mean before that, while you were nursing.
Yes, I used to. And when I used to wash, I used to tie it and put it on the top of my head.
So it was long?
It was long. Yes. No one thought of having short hair then. I think when I came back to England with very short hair, rather just down to my neck, I think I was the only woman with short hair.
Then you must have had trouble washing your hair.
Yes, we had trouble in washing our hair. And we had other trouble because insects would come in and we couldn't avoid them. We couldn't escape them. I think they brought more misery to us than almost anything else. No, I wouldn't say that, because, of course, it was the suffering of the soldiers that hurt us so dreadfully, so vitally. But conditions there were very poor and very primitive. And, of course, when we were able to be in the cottages of the peasants, we were thankful because we had a roof over our head. But the very roof itself was chock-a-block with moving insects. And the floor, too, and the walls. So you only had to sit down for a few minutes, and then they would invade.
What did you do about that? Did you just suffer, or did you have anything you could
do? There was nothing we could do. Just suffer, as you suggest. But we did try to smoke the mazorka, the very strong soldier's tobacco. It was the cheapest and strongest and most unpleasant tobacco that you could ever come across. Even the smell was awful, and it was supposed to be the smell and the smoke that would hypnotize or perhaps cause these varied insects to crawl away and die. Well, we got some, and Rupzov, I remember, our tent boy, who was always in attendance for us, bringing us water for washing and whatever we needed, he rolled the cigarettes for us. But we discovered, to our sorrow, that the smoke was so obnoxious and made us all feel so sick that we decided it was better to remain with the insects than try to exterminate them.
What condition were the patients in when they arrived? Did they have lice? The soldiers, I mean.
Their condition was depended. Some of them were more cleanly inclined than others. Probably they had managed to change linen or they had managed to wash in some way. But for the most part, during the very heavy engagements, there was no question of the soldier washing or changing his clothes. They were fighting for life day and night, days on end. So many of them who came to us, the first thing we did was to split up their trousers and their waistcoat or suit, their uniform, and throw it away. I think the very worst soldiers, the wounded soldiers who came to us, were not the Russians. They were the Turks. We had quite a few when we were down there on the Romanian front. And then it was not only throwing their blood-stained, mud-stained clothing away. We literally had to scrape their bodies of a most extraordinary crust which seemed to have enveloped them during their weeks and months on the front. Sometimes they were very upset about it. They preferred to have it rather than be cleaned and have new pants and shirts put on. But finally they succumbed, and I'm sure in the long run they were very grateful for being clean once again after months of unsanitary, unwholesome clothing.